This podcast is brought to you by the Minnesota Daily. With new episodes every Thursday morning, you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, and the Daily's website. You are listening to In the Know, breaking down the U's news. My name is Mariah King, and as you'll notice, my better half, more commonly referred to as Luke Diamond, is missing this week. Please, please come home soon. In this episode, we will be discussing the University of Minnesota's Morris campus, as well as a professor who has an interesting food palate, to say the least. But first, let's get to this week's top headlines. Last fall, Boynton Health Clinic gave roughly 20,000 flu shots and is hoping to surpass that this season. If you haven't gotten your flu shot yet, please keep your distance and take care of that as soon as possible. Appointed by President Kaler, Christopher Kramer will take over as the new Vice President of Research here at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. The Raptor Center, located on the St. Paul campus, started a new fellowship this week that will train 3 new rehabilitators as well as 3 new veterinarians to save more wild animals around Minnesota. The University of Minnesota just added its first Islamic Studies program. It's a minor that was added due to an increase in demand. And lastly, as the midterms get closer, Campus Campaign Strategies has shifted their focus from candidate-driven campaigns to simply encouraging students to get out and get to the polls. Now, let's dive into the big stories of the week. We are sitting down with Lou Blank, a reporter for Campus Desk.
Pleasure to be here.
So, Lou, what'd you write about this week?
Bugs.
I think I speak for everyone when I say, what?
I wrote about Professor Sujaya Rao, who investigates and researches eating insects as both a way to increase your health and to save the world from starvation.
I could not be more intrigued if I tried. Please, please keep talking.
So we all know that as the human population grows and our land becomes more and more scarce and our water becomes more scarce, we're going to have some difficulties in providing sufficient food for the entire world population. And Professor Rao believes that eating insects is actually a major way to do that because they're high in protein and they're very easy to produce. There's a small amount of inputs like water and land and food that you need to provide to raise insects. They're pretty easy to raise, and she believes that if we all just eat insects, we might save the world from starvation.
That is quite the statement, and you said that Professor Rao said this?
That's right. She gave a presentation at the Bell Museum as part of their food fest.
I gotta ask what we are all wondering. Did she eat a bug?
She ate bug products, as did I, in fact. So we were at Food Fest, and she was passing around to all the attendants tortilla chips made from cricket flour, which is flour made from ground-up insects, and a type of pumpkin bread that was absolutely delicious. I could not tell when I ate it that it had any sort of insect material in it. It was definitely an interesting experience. I feel like incorporating into food is going to be difficult because of all the taboo, but just as difficult is making it affordable because right now cricket flour is more expensive than regular flour.
Oh, wow. Okay. Can you buy that at your local Trader Joe's?
You can't buy it at the local Trader Joe's yet, but there are some online vendors that sell it, as well as some Twin City startups, actually, that are getting into insect food production.
Okay, so is this a thing that's going to become nationwide? I mean, is this on the rise?
Well, Professor Rao would hope that. There's a lot of hurdles to overcome, definitely a lot of taboos against eating insects in the United States that don't exist in other nations around the world. But Professor Rao hopes so, and she also believes that if not, it might become a necessity when the world starts running out of food. So in Professor Rao's presentation, she cited some Food and Agriculture Organization data that said we're going to have about 9 billion people inhabiting this earth by 2050. And to do that, to feed them, we're going to have to double our food production. And this is at a time when we have land shortage, overfishing, aridification, climate change, lack of water, drought, and all that. So it's going to be really difficult to feed 9 billion people. And that's why insects, which are very, very abundant, you can find them anywhere, and they're high in protein and easy to raise and collect, that might be the solution to the world's upcoming food crisis.
Okay, so Lou, answer me this. After doing all this research, talking to all these people, would you say that you're more likely to start eating bugs in your everyday diet?
And I could see myself personally making insects an important part of my diet. I'm not so sure about just eating worms out of the ground, but maybe, you know, making my pancakes with some cricket flour. I could see myself doing that.
Invite me over for breakfast.
All right. It's a deal.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in today, Lou.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
For this next story, we're sitting down with features reporter Bella Daly Steele. The story that you reported on last week had to do with the University of Minnesota Morris campus, correct?
It did. Last week, I reported and wrote an article about the full tuition waiver that University of Minnesota Morris offers to Native American students. The full tuition waiver came into existence essentially after the University of Minnesota Morris ceased to be an Indian boarding school, which it was until 1909. At this point, the land was transferred to the state government of Minnesota, and there was an agreement between the state government and the federal government that any Native American students who attended university there or school there, because it wasn't always a university, would receive full tuition waivers. And then this became solidified in 1960 when the waiver itself was written. Before that, it was an agreement.
Who did you reach out to for this article? Did you talk to former students or current professors?
Yeah, so I talked to a variety of sources, most of whom had used the tuition waiver when they attended University of Minnesota Morris. I talked to two recent graduates, and then also two University of Minnesota professors who now teach at the Morris and Duluth campuses who also attended Morris for undergraduate.
So the students that you talked to, do they believe that this waiver is making up for what has happened in the past?
No one I talked to seemed to think that this waiver was in any way any sort of reparations for the university's past as an Indian boarding school. However, a lot of people I talked to seem to think that it helped create a culture at the university that isn't present at many campuses around Minnesota or even around the United States. So I think there is a general consensus that the tuition waiver in itself is a very good thing for the Native community. However, there was one student I spoke to who is not a student at Morris, but rather a student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, who says that he thinks that the tuition waiver should be extended to other system campuses, specifically the Twin Cities campus, because it's built on unceded Dakota land.
Okay. So this is only in the Morris campus? It's not system-wide?
It's not system-wide.
If this waiver isn't system-wide, then it begs the question, how does Morris's campus population compare to that of the Twin Cities? Do they see an influx in students because of this waiver?
So I can't say that the amount of Native students at University of Minnesota Morris is tied to the waiver. It definitely seems that way because at the University of Minnesota Morris, Native students make up 20% of the student population. Comparing that to other system campuses, that's almost more than 10 times the normal percentage. At the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, it's only just over 1%.
Here, it's just over 1%?
Yes. But you have to take into consideration that Morris, compared to the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, is much smaller. So the percentages are going to be a little skewed. So in reality, there's a couple more students of Native descent at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. However, that really doesn't make that much of a difference in the entire student body if those students aren't being as represented.
Thanks for listening.